New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to episode 71 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name's Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. Wow, John, what a difference 8 days makes, huh?
Yeah, they're back.
Trevor Lawrence is back, Calvin Ridley is back, play calling is back, everything and everyone is back, especially the Jaguars overall.
I'm starting to think the San Francisco 49ers might be good. That's what my big takeaway from yesterday is. I'm starting to think they might be pretty good.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that Kyle Shanahan off a bye week with all of his guys fully healthy might be a little bit unfair for everyone, anyone who's facing them.
Yeah, I was talking crazy entering that game, and it very much like yesterday was like for people who think the Jaguars are a bad like team after that loss and a bad offense. That's what a bad team looks like. You know, that's what like we talked about with the Steelers. That's what a bad offense looks like. You know, just absolute Mickey Mouse, 60 minutes of pure nothingness. That on it, like in my time covering the Jags since 2019, that was the worst Titans team I've seen.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's close either.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's like, yeah, they just didn't really seem to have, like, the same juice they usually bring. And maybe it's because it was, like, never really close. And if it was close, like it was last year's Week 18, they would have kind of brought the juice. But, yeah. I was expecting – I don't know. I always had the assumption that Vrabel teams are always keep it close and always put up a fight, which isn't really untrue. But, like, at this point, like, the roster has a lot less talent than it did. And, like, they're starting Will Levis, who's at this point not better than Ryan Tannehill. Derrick Henry is like 38 years old, et cetera, et cetera. So
I'm not sure he's better than Ryan Fitzpatrick. we'll get to it. But I got some Will Levis takes. It was, I don't know, man. Every time Trevor Lawrence has a horrible, one of the worst performances of his career, they need to do something to make sure the Titans are on the schedule next, because they're his slump buster, man. He last three games against them, he has, I believe, 9 touchdowns overall, you know, 6 throwing, 3 rushing. He started over once in that time, and that one time was that really dumb Jamal Agnew trick play in the red zone in Week 18, which counted as a fumble for him. I mean, he's like lights out against, you know, the Titans. This week, you know, so far, we still have Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts to play, but out of 27 quarterbacks, he's second in adjusted EPA per play. You know, he's 7th in success rate. You know, in terms of CPOE, he's 2nd, only behind Brock, the Rock Purdy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's anytime he has a terrible game and the Titans are next on the schedule, that really feels like an instant like remedy. You know, like whatever ails Trevor Lawrence, the Titans can fix.
I feel like not too long ago, I felt like he really had the Colts hand because I think Minshew completed like 19 of 20 passes, and then Lawrence came in and like was immediately doing the same stuff to Gus Bradley's defense, where he was like completing a really high mark of his passes and just being efficient in general. But now it's like kind of the same way for the Titans. And I mean, definitely a good thing to kind of like be able to like handle two of your division opponents. But next week against the Texans will obviously be the biggest test all of a sudden, even though at the beginning of the season, I definitely would have said the Titans and the Colts are like the biggest competitors, the Jaguars, for the AFC South, at least for this season. It's pretty obviously the Texans at this point.
it, like we talked about this 2 week stretch being the most important, and it is, you know, for the division, but it was very funny how like everybody in Jacksonville built up this Titans game as such a huge game, you know, such a, you know, important test. And then like 10 minutes into it, they're like, oh man, these guys stink. Like, this is nothing, you know? So it's definitely, you know, next weekend. It was cool. Like the Jaguars players were like finding out in the locker room, like during interviews, that Houston won. They're like we'd ask them about the Texans. They're like, did they win today? And you know, it definitely seems like they are, you know, primed that game. I wanted to ask you before we get into the offense. Evan Engram had an interesting, you know, quote yesterday. He basically said he feels like they're a better team when their back's against a wall, when they feel like they have to play, you know, for something, like to prove, like yesterday they had to, you know, recover from last week's game, obviously a bunch of negativity being thrown at them. Is there something to that, you think? Like, they literally just play – it seems like it to me. They literally play better when people are not counting them in, like when people aren't, like, talking about them like the next big team. Because twice this year when they've gotten that hype, you know, first 3 weeks of the season and then against San Francisco, they've just completely fallen on their faces. And then once they face some adversity and they get that doubt, they literally play better. And if the players are thinking they play better with the backs against the wall, like, is that an actual, like, thing you think, or is that just player speak?
I don't know. I was kind of thinking it was just player speak, because it's like in the second half against San Francisco, like, everyone was counting them out, and like, did they do anything then? I mean, I guess at that point, like, it's like that wasn't even really a ball game, but like they've gone into the red zone plenty of times, like, with a, like, losing the game and like need to put some points up, and then they like fumble the ball away. So it's like you were like, you face adversity like within these games that you lose, and then you like keep shooting yourself in the foot. So it's like, it's nice that you then like come back and rebound the next game, but it's like, I don't know. And like, obviously, like, they did like face adversity like midway through one game during the playoff game last year against the Chargers, so they like, they've shown they can do like that style before. But I feel like it's like mostly player speak, where it's like, I don't know, it's hard to judge, because I feel like it's almost like the hot hand in basketball, where it's like a confidence thing. There's not an actual way to measure it, so it's like, like the nerds and scientists and all the nerds and scientists will say that like the hot hand doesn't exist in basketball, but then like if you ask like most people who have played basketball, I think they would say like yeah, like a thing
of which no nerds have done.
I don't know. So like the point I'm trying to make is that like I'm sitting here from like my bedroom saying that I don't think it's like a real thing, but like,
yeah,
maybe like Evan Engram said it himself, so maybe we should be believing him. Like, if the players actually can like feel it, even if like I'm sitting here and saying like I don't really buy it, like if they buy it, that's what matters.
So I think the big storyline from yesterday is obviously Trevor having a big 4-touchdown day. I thought he was really good as a passer. Like, he underthrew a pass to Zay Jones while getting hit, resulted in DPI, not a big deal. I thought the deep shot to Engram was like maybe a little bit underthrown, but still should have been caught.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I thought he was like terrific, you know, like basically flawless. Calvin Ridley had his best game as a Jaguar, his first 2-touchdown game, first time he scored since week 4, first time he scored in Jacksonville, had his third 100-yard game of the season. I know I tweeted it out, and I'll pull it up real quick, but his splits with and without Zay Jones infuriate me. Like, it shouldn't make sense. Like, this is not Jerry Rice on the other side of the field, you know? Maybe pull it up right now. Okay, so Calvin Ridley has 3 100-yard games this year, week 1, week 5, and this week. All have came in weeks that Zay Jones plays. Calvin Ridley this year in 4 games that Zay Jones has played, 24 catches, 358 yards, 3 touchdowns. Like, you do that as like a season long like space, and he's having the year everybody thought, you know. Calvin Ridley in the 7 games that Zay Jones hasn't played, 18 catches. What? 216 yards and 1 touchdown. Like, it, and most of those, by the way, came against Pittsburgh when he had like 6 catches and 81 yards. Like, it makes absolutely, you know, zero sense to me whatsoever. But from your vantage point yesterday, you know, in the press box, how much of a difference did that make? Like, I already had somebody tweet at me, and they were like, so much for your narrative that adding Zay wouldn't fix all the offense's ailments. And I said I was going to ask you which one of Zay's 20 yards yesterday were your favorite. But my personal belief after seeing Ridley's usage yesterday is that the offense is just too static when Zay's out because they don't have another – like it's a three-receiver like room. And they literally have to plant Ridley on the outside Wednesday's out, and then they like Jamal Agnew basically is the guy that they move around outside, inside, etc. When Zay plays, he does like the Calvin role for most of this year. He's planted on the outside, he's just doing downfield stuff basically. And yesterday, you saw Calvin line up in the slot more. You know, the PFF's data isn't out yet, but I'd assume yesterday was like his highest slot percentage of the season. You saw a lot more tight splits from him. You know, I think both his touchdowns came from like condensed formations where he was lined up either inside or like extremely tight with Christian Kirk. Like you just saw him use more versatility, you know? So it's clear that, yeah, having Zay helps in the fact that defenses can't just focus on Ridley because they don't care about covering Jamal Agnew and Tim Jones. But yes, they hammered home the point to me that the big difference is like, to me, Zay helps them utilize Ridley better because they can do more with him instead of just literally planting him on the outside and asking him to run go routes all game.
Yeah. My like oversimplification at first was like for the Zay Jones effect was just that like Ridley was kind of like forced to be running a couple of like decoy routes, just like so that the Jags would have someone to be able to like threaten the top of the defense to then like open up stuff for like other guys underneath. And like, you want Ridley to be the guy that you open stuff up for, but at the same time, like, no one's opening stuff up for him. So then they kind of like had to have him open up stuff for other guys just because of like the way the personnel shaked out after like went with Zay Jones out of the lineup. So I kind of thought that like Zay Jones, even if he had like zero targets and no production, that like if he was like started running those decoy routes and like just like and he was kind of like taking the top off of defenses so that Ridley could find a little bit more work underneath, I thought that was kind of like the biggest solution. But honestly, I think like Ridley's big game has more to do with Trevor Lawrence's knee than Zay Jones's knee, just because like we talked about it on the preview pod about how like coaches and players like both brought it up last week, and like how we were like, oh, maybe that knee is like should be a little bit more of a talking point than like it was during the bye week at least. And like, I mean, everything they kind of talked about last week, we saw on Sunday, like with like Lawrence was used in the red zone as a rusher a lot, but then also there was a ton of play action, like some stuff with like him rolling out, but then a lot of just also like play action and staying in the pocket. And so I think like the play action had a bigger effect more than anything else, just because like the Jags were in a positive game script, so the Titans were expecting a run and or expecting a lot of runs. And so the Jaguars were able to kind of like pass over their heads. And that's something that they were not able to do at all last week against the Niners. And that was something that we talked about on our preview show that the Niners have been struggling with during like their 3-game losing streak, was that they were like susceptible to inside rushing. And then like when they would try to fix that, then they could get beat with play action like over the top of their linebackers. And that was also with Dre Greenlaw out for a game or two. But so we didn't see that at all. And then now with positive game scripts, even though like Jacksonville's rushing game was like not bad, but like not good efficiency wise, against who did they just play?
The Titans.
The Titans. Yeah, I'm sorry, my mind. 9:18 in the morning, still waking up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think play action had a big deal because then like it like just created more space because the Titans were expecting run, but then also like I think there's certain like route concepts and like, designs within play action that like do a better job of freeing up Ridley than just like traditional drop back stuff.
Yeah. It was very funny that like the week that Mike Florio, you know, threw a fit about the Joe Burrow injury thing, that Trevor Lawrence late in the week gets added to the injury report, literally because Doug Peterson said like on like Wednesday that they haven't done as much movement stuff with him because of his knee. And then you see him like the most movement he's had like basically all season. Like they called several designed runs for him, especially in the red zone. Like the first one, I was like, what the hell are you doing? Yeah, it worked. It worked. And the nerds won't want to hear this. I know this much. Yeah. But there's something to, like, you don't even have to run the ball efficiently to set up play action, but you still have to have the threat of the run. And both Doug and Trevor yesterday said, like, a big part of the win was press sticking with the run. He didn't do that against San Francisco. Like, I think a big thing, like, a lot of coordinators do is, and, like, shit, I mean, I do it with 10-year-olds. Like, if the run isn't working, after a couple of plays, you're like, okay, let's throw the running game out completely. It's not going to work, but you have to keep at it. You know, like, you can't be obnoxious about it, obviously, but you have to at least try to keep the defense on its toes and not be so one-dimensional. And I thought they did a good job of that yesterday. And I also thought that they finally found the right mix at running back. You know, ETN, 14 carries. D'Ernest Johnson, 7 carries. Tank Bigsby had 1 carry before, you know, he went in the game late. I think that's the right mix. You know, like, they have been riding ETN so hard in the first half of the season that whenever ETN gets a water break, I get tweets asking me if he's hurt. I'm like, no, like, no, this is normal. He's supposed to be off the field sometimes, you know? And I thought Johnson was impressive. I know he didn't have big rushing numbers, but his catch and run on that fourth down, which I also thought was maybe Lawrence's best play of the day, like just purely instinctual. And he faked the hell out of me. I did not think that he threw the ball. I thought he was like trying to pump fake and run with it. But I think that was a big thing too, is, you know, they, one, stuck with the run, and two, it's easier to stick with the run when you're not, you know, having slamming Travis Etienne into Jeffrey Simmons, you know, 20 times. It's a lot easier to stick with the run when you're going with like a platoon, you know, a rotation instead of just one guy.
Yeah, for sure. Like, that wasn't really, I think, one of the takeaways I had from the game. So I'm glad that you took it away. Is that, like, Tank ET or Tank ET?
Not Tank.
Travis Etienne definitely, like, shouldn't be anywhere close to leading the league in carries. Even though you could definitely dance on the argument that you won during the summer about Etienne being a bigger player than Tank and having a better workload case, but
Tank's still bigger. Tank's still bigger. I'm not crazy.
Dude, I don't know. Do you look at them?
What are you talking about? Tank is significantly bigger.
I don't know, man. Maybe it's just that, like, ETN is taller and that's, like, making a big difference for me. But
are you looking at the Florida ETN?
No, I'm thinking about Travis.
I don't know. You called him Tank a minute ago. You don't even remember who they played yesterday. I'm starting to think maybe you're Gene and you're just interviewing the wrong player completely.
Anyway, I think it was nice to see that D'Ernest got going. Just because, like, I mean, they tried using Tank and then he had a, like, pretty bad offsides on a punt return. And then, like, either the very next play or two plays after that was the DeAndre Hopkins touchdown. I feel like he might have had, like, a miscue on offense too, but maybe it was just that special teams penalty. But then it was nice to see that he got that fourth down run in, was it the fourth quarter? Maybe it was the third.
The hammer.
Yeah, to give him a little confidence. Picked up 2 or 3 yards on a fourth and one. So that was cool. But yeah, D'Ernest getting 7 carries was nice to see, especially in a blowout, because, like, that's what I was expecting from the Falcons game especially, and then also the Colts win, the second Colts win especially. It was like, one, like, now that you have, like, a 2-possession lead, like, let's see, like, a little bit of D'Ernest. Like, you don't need to run Travis 10 times in the fourth quarter.
Like Etienne, as good as he shouldn't be averaging 20 carries a game. Like he shouldn't be up there with McCaffrey in terms of, like, and that's not a knock on his talent or anything. It's just like that McCaffrey's a special breed, you know, like, that it's not normal to be utilized like that. It's not. And the fact that Etienne has been relatively healthy this entire season is a big testament to him, because it's wild. And I also think, you know, the offensive line got absolutely killed over the last week, which, you know, deservedly so. They were really bad against the 49ers. But again, 49ers, Javon Hargrave, you know, Arik Armstead, Nick Bosa, Chase Young. I mean, that's a crazy front four. I thought the Titans front would do better. Like, Jeffrey Simmons dominated against the run. thought they would do more in terms of pass rush. You could even tell the Titans are like trying to manufacture pass rush. It was like some simulated pressures. Like they had Arden Key off ball like a couple of times and like blitzing. And the Titans just weren't getting home. So I whipped on that one. I thought the Jaguars offensive line would struggle. And I don't know, maybe I'd have to go back and look, see how much 12 and 13 personnel they did, how much max protected did. But it didn't feel like it was like a lot of one and two man routes, lot of play action, but it felt like they were spreading the field out, you know? And like Ingram literally said after the game, he was like, yeah, when I was looking at the iPad, Trevor was just chilling back there. it was noticeable, like the amount of time that he had in the pocket. And you can say this about literally probably every quarterback, except maybe Patrick Mahomes. But I mean, shocker, Trevor Lawrence is a different quarterback when he's clean than when he's under pressure.
Mm-hmm. Even like a little bit of pressure versus a lot of pressure. Like the second Ridley touchdown where he like stepped up a little bit in the pocket and then got the pass off. Like he can deal with that. But then like it's another thing when like you got four guys just like collapsing the pocket and just have nowhere to go, especially on like that not yet 100% knee. So yeah, I'm with you. But
yeah,
I think it'll like now that he's getting healthier, now that like Walker is getting healthier, now that Ezra is getting like more in the mix, like the offensive line won't be close to perfect. At the same time, like I feel like the pressures that they allow will more be like one guy barely losing a pressure, and then Trevor can kind of like help take care of that and like clean that up, kind of like how he did last year. And like I mean like last year, his whole career up until this year, it felt like he was really good at like avoiding pressure and like
for sure
acts pretty much and like turning pressure into, I mean, maybe not a completion, but not a sack either. And he's been worse this year just because of like all the factors I just outlined. So
I have a take.
We'll see.
I have a take.
Okay, go ahead.
Maybe he's just really good at avoiding edge pressure because he did that a couple times yesterday, and not so good at avoiding interior pressure because all the plays where he looked like a doofus against the 49ers were guys coming up the middle.
Yeah, I think that's true. I feel like we said that at some point last year. We were like, yeah, I think Trevor is like pretty godly almost about like beating pressure on the edge, but then like the interior is really where you really need to get him. But then we were like, oh, but that's like kind of true for every elite quarterback. Like,
yeah,
like with Tom Brady, it was always like you gotta like win with four, but especially like in the interior, because like he wasn't fast, obviously, but his pocket presence was insanely good. So it's like that for every quarterback.
It's funny, like seeing the reactions, being like people saying Trevor is back when he's very much the exact same player that he was against the 49ers. You know, like matchups matter, like they just do. And my big takeaway from yesterday is the Jaguars should pray if they go on a playoff run, it doesn't end with a game against the 49ers. That was my biggest offensive takeaway for them, is that the offense, it's not broken per se. You know, it can still put some stuff together, but when they're playing an elite defensive front,
I was going to say like the Niners or the Eagles, it's not like the Cowboys are much better. They don't have as many like interior guys that are good as the Niners or the Eagles, but like all three of those like NFC juggernauts have some stacked pass rushes.
So basically the best potential Super Bowl matchup for the Jaguars would be the Lions,
absolutely,
which would be two weeks of Hutchinson and Walker, and that one single game would decide who was the better pick. That's the real Bucky Bowl. That's the real one.
We all know the league would never allow a Detroit-Jacksonville Super Bowl. Maybe one of them can sneak in, but there's no way both of them are getting in.
And nor should they.
Yeah, that's true.
you got anything else on the offense?
No. Felt nice to be vindicated about or validated about Calvin Ridley, finally.
It did. Hey, you called it. It was a Calvin Ridley week. You've been calling it for 10 weeks now, but it was nonetheless a Calvin Ridley week.
You'll be right eventually.
So one of my best friends, like from high school, he's a giant Lions fan. He took Ridley, he told me, in all three fantasy leagues he's in this year. And every single week, Ridley has done bad. He's, one, texted me saying, what happened to Cardio Ridley? And then, two, blamed me specifically for him drafting him. Like, you told me he was going to be great and all that. So I told him this week, I was like, Do not play him by any means this week. Bench him because I don't want to wear the blame anymore. And he benched him for DeAndre Swift. He went off. And he was distraught. But I,
See, when I get a take wrong, I stick with the take.
And the thing is,
I just keep hammering it home until I'm right. I don't ever get off of it.
The thing is, when he's complained about Ridley, I've always said, well, if you listen to the Jaguar Report podcast, you would know we said, don't play him this week. And we definitely said this week, you know, yeah, he'll probably have a decent game. But I was still was like, no, don't you dare play him, because if he does bad and you come back to me, I will be hell to pay. So it worked out good. Ridley is back.
Ridley's back. All right. Now we've officially covered the offense.
That's right. All right. We're going to cut for a break and be right back. All right, guys. I'll say it. Will Levis isn't a top 10 quarterback.
John, are you sure about that? Are we recording right now?
The people were having the most asinine takes after his first two starts, one of which was a really bad offensive game against the Steelers, which I didn't even get. I retweeted it yesterday. I know it came from a Titans reporter, so obviously it's biased, but he like asked a question. He was like, rank the AFC quarterbacks for the next couple of years. And the amount of Levis over Lawrence answers like from their fan base was pure coop. The amount of people, Titans fans, I've seen like in the replies of other tweets saying, yeah, yes, they sucked, but at least Levis flashed. And I'm like, no, he did not. You can't say that. He absolutely did not. Levis was the worst quarterback they've played this year, is my take. And that counts Kenny, Two Gloves Pickett, and Desmond Ridder. Bryce Young will probably be worse than Levis, but so far to me, Levis is the worst quarterback the Jaguars have played, and they get him again in Week 18. They should be playing Tannehill. I don't get what he's doing out there.
Yeah, I originally felt bad for him because I was like, Tennessee's offensive line is in shambles. And then DeAndre Hopkins is kind of nice, but obviously he's at the end of his prime or already out of his prime. And then same probably applies to Derrick Henry. So I was just feeling it for Levis. He didn't really get placed in that great of a spot. But then after watching him on Sunday, none of that is untrue, but he didn't do anything to help himself or the team out either. He didn't
catch a shotgun snap.
Flashes are harder to show when you're in a bad environment, but he didn't show any. The DeAndre Hopkins touchdown was nice, but
it was a trick play too.
That too. But I don't know.
So 58% of his passing yardage came on the DeAndre Hopkins play, and then the Chris Moore volleyball that he threw that Monteric Brown wasn't able to find in the air. 58% of his yards. You could tell, I'm with you. A lot of it was their offensive line's really bad, but they weren't trusting him to do even the simplest of things. Every obvious passing down was a screen. Yeah. And he almost threw three picks. One thing I'll give him is he was pretty good at avoiding sacks, I guess. There were a couple different sacks that he got out of.
Yeah.
Definitely one of them, the chase on one, should have been intentional grounding, I think. But for all the people saying, the entire AFC South found their franchise quarterbacks, I would pull back the reins on that one a little bit. The Texans have the Colts, super small sample size. It's probably too small for anybody to say definitively. But I think Richardson at least had some super encouraging flashes. The advanced metrics, love them.
Those are flashes.
Yeah, exactly. Levis, we talked about it coming into the week. He had the highest air yards than any quarterback since he had started, but he's been among the lowest in EPA per play and success rate. And, we saw it yesterday. It was brutal. And unfortunately, EPA per play, success rate, et cetera, doesn't take into account Mickey Mouse plays, the DeAndre Hopkins thing and the Chris Moore play alone have him as not one of the worst graded quarterbacks this week. But I thought he was putrid, and it was one of my big, my main takeaways, my observations article is that the Jaguars shouldn't care about Will Levis, at all right now. They should care about CJ Stroud. He's a dude. He is very much arrived. Will Levis, we'll see what happens with him, but I at this point in time, nobody should care that he is the Titans starting quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's a good take. My hot take for this week is that Joe Flacco is going to have the third best game of any opposing quarterback left on Jacksonville's schedule, because they got Stroud next week. They got Lamar Jackson and the Ravens in week 15. So I'm saying Joe Flacco is going to have the third best passing yardage.
Not Baker?
So, yeah, not Baker.
Not Jake Browning?
Not Jake Browning. Not
will Bryce Young hit 150?
Are there any other guys? No, that's it.
Bryce Young, number one overall pick.
Yeah, I said not Bryce Young. Stefanski loves to do the thing that the Jags did last week, where it's like, if he has got a positive game script and the opposing defense is expecting a run, then like he'll like spam play action and get like all these like easy completions. And so I think like Joe Flacco, if the Cleveland game like happens to stay anywhere close, then like obviously the Jags are going to key in on Cleveland's good rushing game. And so I think like Joe Flacco could get more yards than a Bryce Young or a Will Levis or et cetera, et cetera.
I agree with that.
He's set up in like a better scheme with a better defense, and that those other quarterbacks is more so to take than anything about him.
I think Levis had 26 net passing yards in the first half.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like that, like we talked about with Caldwell like earlier this year. Like he's done well this year against bad quarterbacks, which is something they did well down the stretch last year-ish. Like, they didn't do as good against Josh Dobbs, who I still contend isn't actually a relevant quarterback. But I feel like this year they've been much better against the bad quarterbacks than they were last year. Like, they've consistently this year dunked on the, you know, the weaker competition, which is right. What you want to see. And so, like, in week three, they played a rookie quarterback, a bad offensive line, since it was all backups, and they didn't disrupt the offense at all. This week, obviously, the rookie quarterback's much worse than it was in week three, but this time they were able to, you know, disrupt things. So I think that's at least good to see, is that their defense can be counted on against, you know, lesser opponents, like lesser units, which is maybe not something I think you've always been able to say.
Yeah, they like showed some flashes of it last year when they had like the second half of the season stretch, and they played some pretty brutal quarterbacks. But even then, it was like, all right, you're like kind of getting the job done. But now, as you said, they're like actually dunking on the bad quarterbacks. So that's always a good thing to see.
Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
Are his days of terrorizing Jacksonville over? Devin Lloyd met him in the hole yesterday and took him down.
With that quarterback and that offensive line, then yeah, maybe. He had negative 0.35 expected points added per play on early rushes on Sunday. Damn. Which was, for context, Miles Sanders ranks last in the league with negative 0.32 EPA per play on all downs. Bless you.
I forgot to mute myself that time.
Like the part of the reason that like Will Levis didn't really look great and they threw a lot of third down screens is that they just got nothing going on early downs with Derrick Henry. They had a 27% success rate too on early down rushes. Like, I don't know what like their average third down distance to go was, but I can imagine it was pretty high.
It felt like a lot of third and sevens, third and eights, stuff like that. Like, I can't remember a single like Henry run from the game. Like, you know, he normally has at least one run, like even in games where he doesn't pop off, like in their week 18 last year. I remember him barreling at Darius Williams at full speed. I remember that run. If you told me he didn't play yesterday, I believe you. Devin Lloyd met him in the hole and put him in the ground. And that, to me, I was like, okay, big play for Lloyd. But I was also like, maybe a little symbolic of where, you know, Henry's at, especially in terms of, you know, facing the Jaguars, because they, you know, since, you know, Peterson and Mike Caldwell got here, Jags, one, are obviously 3-0 against the Titans, but two, Henry hasn't had a signature performance against, you know, this regime, like, at all. And a part of that is obviously game script. Like, the Jaguars put up a lot of points in their first meeting last year. You know, this year the Jaguars could obviously sell out against the run because they didn't have a quarterback. But I don't know. I think the days of Henry, you know, putting the Jaguars on SportsCenter are probably over.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested to see, like, how long he kind of sticks around there and whether he tries to find greener pastures. But Yeah, it's almost sad because, like, obviously, like, he's been bad news for the Jags organization for a long time, but he's just such a good player. That's kind of tough seeing someone so good kind of, like, fall out of his prime. But, again, obviously, Jags fans probably don't really care.
Here's my question for you when it comes to defense. Obviously, things get tougher, you know, as you go on. Devon Hamilton, healthy scratch yesterday. Mm-hmm. Doug said after the game that he said he wants him to be, like, in the right shape mentally and physically, etc. Harped on how much time he's missed, etc. How big of a storyline should that be moving forward? Because I'm sorry, I feel gaslit. I kept being told we like our pass rush because we're getting Devon Hamilton, DeJuan Smoot back. We like our pass rush because we're getting Devon Hamilton, DeJuan Smoot back. Mm-hmm. We like our pass rush because we're getting Devon Hamilton. And then you don't have him back. So it's like I'm being fed a crap sandwich and being told that, like, it's the only thing to eat. And I'm like, no, I'm not a kid or a columnist. Like, I'm not going to be, like, sold this lie.
Yeah. So what I told Mia was that, like, if this happens for, like, multiple weeks, then, like, my concern levels will, like, spike all the way up. But, like, for this week, I kind of feel like it's, like Angelo Blackson was a healthy scratch last week. And then this week, Angelo Blackson played. And Devon Hamilton didn't. So I think, like, the coaching staff just, like, genuinely thought they were going to get better reps out of Blackson than Hamilton. And so, like, for this week, like, okay, sure. Like, if you think that, like, Ham is still, like, working his way back and could, like, take an off week, then, like, okay, I want to cut you a little slack. But, like, if the same thing happens next week, then, like, I think all the alarm bells should be going off.
Doug said it'd be a week-to-week thing. He said a week-to-week decision.
I don't know. It's also, like, it's tough because, like, we don't have, like, full knowledge of, like, what his original injury was. So, like, I understand that the point you're trying to make is that, like, the Jaguars have, like, said stuff and, like, now what? But, like, it's hard for me to, like, understand how to interpret it since I don't know a lot about the original injury. Kind of injury where, like, he could, like, all of a sudden have a setback.
I just feel incredibly gaslit. I feel personally, like, gaslit. Like, it's,
yeah.
Like, I mean,
do you think they were being, like, serious though?
Yeah, it's more of an excuse. They were 100%. No, I don't think they were 100% being serious. They thought Devon Hamilton, DeJuan Smoot, was going to make the pass rush improve at 1,000,000%. 1,000,000%. They thought that.
He probably had, like, 5 quarterback hits in his career up until the season, which he then.
Yeah, it's stupid. I agree with you.
To bring it to the linebackers on your Devin Lloyd point, I kind of think the Jags defense just, like, goes with their linebackers, however their linebackers play. Because I think for pretty much every defense, like, the pass rush in the secondary or just, like, the defensive line in the secondary will, like, make some splash plays or not make some splash plays. And either way, like, the performances of those two units tend to sway the outcome of games. But for the Jaguars, I feel like it's their linebacker unit just because, I mean, it's sort of a little bit of recency bias because they played really well against the Titans and played not very well against the Niners. And again, like, Shanahan loves to cook up opposing linebackers, and he had an extra week to prepare. I'll cut them a little bit of slack for that. But, like, Foye was all over the place. Like you said, Devin Lloyd was all over the place on the run game too. Like, I think Josh Allen is pretty obviously the best player on the defense, but I think Foye is, like, the most important or the most valuable. Mm-hmm. I think you'd see a bigger drop-off in the defensive performance if you went from, like, Foye to Chad Muma than Josh Allen to Caleb Onchaison.
I don't know. I still feel like Josh Allen's more important.
Yeah, you're probably right. But it's got to be a hot take, right?
If Josh Allen has a sprained ankle and you smoot with Chase Arner in there for the next 2 weeks, then get back to me on who's more important. Then again, though, we haven't really seen their offense with, without Foye, their defense without Foye, like, at all in the last 2 years. I think the only snaps he's missed are, like against the Texans in week three when they pulled everybody.
Yeah. I'm just like impressed that like Tyson has been out, and like Cisco, I feel like I didn't really like, he's kind of like cooled down after starting the season super hot. And so I've just been like impressed with the Jaguars defense, or I guess I was just impressed with the Jaguars defense on Sunday, that they like had such a dominant performance. But then like, other than Foyer, like I feel like he was the only one who had like an individual incredible performance.
Yeah.
So just like the fact that like there's generally speaking, like not really any standout performances, but then as a team or as a unit, they like played lights out, I think is pretty impressive. And I feel like Foyer is just like the glue that kind of holds all that together.
I'd agree with that. He absolutely is. And you know, like you said, like probably like when he has a good game, the defense is having a good game. Like he had a great game yesterday. And I'd agree with you. Like the big thing Shanahan does well is like toying with linebackers. Like it's not even like just like the plays like designed to throw at them, but all the misdirections, you know, play action, everything like that. Like before he even said after game, like after 49ers game, he's like, we expected him to do all that, but it still slowed us down. And I'm not sure there's even an answer to that, which I think I asked this after week three, but why doesn't everybody just run that offense?
Because no one can teach it. Like, because Shanahan's like a genius. Like the Patriots last year when they had Patricia and Joe Judge being their offensive coordinators for Mac Jones, like they tried to implement the Kyle Shanahan offense, and then it was terrible because like no one knew how to teach it. And so like it's just teaching it is a lot easier said than done. Like, I don't know, because it's like if you like create something, I don't know where I'm going with this analogy, but like Kyle Shanahan and like and his dad are like basically like the creators of that system, and so like they know the ins and outs of it, and so like they understand like how and where to add wrinkles and the effect that makes on like every single detail, and like just not everyone has that knowledge.
It's that's a fair point. And that's the big thing I'm interested in this week is going back and watching Jaguars versus Houston in week three and seeing how much like that offense and like the eye candy really messes the defense. It's very telling about the Titans offense that about halfway through talking about them that we're now talking about Kyle Shanahan, but nonetheless, there's just nothing there for Titans offense. The one thing I was maybe a bit surprised by when it came to Jaguars defense personnel-wise, though, was that Buster Brown got the start and I think played the entire game over Gray Jr. Mm-hmm. My early thought is maybe it's because he actually has starting experience because of the two games earlier this year and Gray Jr. just hasn't started. But I don't get why Gray Jr. is your top backup a week before and Buster is a healthy scratch. And then because of an injury, Buster leaps him on the depth chart. Like I don't really get the rhyme and reason with that one.
I don't get it. Maybe Buster had a better week of practice, or I assume it was just something behind closed doors. But yeah, because like I would have thought that, like I was thinking about the run game more than the pass game in terms of like Jacksonville's corners entering this game. And just based on like their frames, I would have thought that Greg Jr. would give you a little bit better run support than Buster Brown, just because Brown is pretty skinny. But yeah, Buster played the whole game. I didn't notice Gregory Jr. playing at all. Also didn't notice any of those three safety sets at all. So
yeah, the only time I noticed Wingard was him yelling at Tank Bigsby on the sideline and video somebody put after he was offside. Yeah, probably throw those out, because yesterday when I saw like the Jaguars, like the Titans load up the box on the first drive and I saw the Jaguars out in base, I was like, yes, that's what you're supposed to do. The three safety is not the answer for stopping the run. I don't care how many tackles in the box Wingard makes, like stick in base. It's what their defense is best at. You know, like I would imagine, not having the data in front of me, their success rate in base versus any other formation is like wildly different.
Just like wildly better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we're going to go ahead and cut for a break because I know for a fact there isn't anything else to talk about the Titans offense. We'll be right back with our game balls. Hey, special teams game ball. Get it together. All right? Get it together. All right? Okay. We'll be right back. Don't scoff at me like you haven't forgotten a special teams game ball like 90% of the season.
Oh no, don't worry, I forgot one today.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and start offensive game ball. I'm gonna give it the Sherwood Press Taylor. Honestly, that's right. I thought he called it.
He calls from you this year, man.
I'm gonna present him with it personally.
You have the players who like just like go in and like don't mess up, but anyway, go on.
Yeah, no. Giving a game ball to a coordinator is much different than Elijah Cooks gets a game ball for making his NFL debut and drinking some Gatorade on the sidelines. That's much different. I thought Press called his best game of the season. One, because I thought, like, just philosophy-wise, he did much better sticking with the run to set up the pass. I thought he protected the offensive line well. I thought he used Trevor well. The usage of Ridley was obviously, you know, great. After a week of everybody, like, putting Press's picture on a pinata and beating the hell out of it online, I thought it was a nice little redemption game for him. I was impressed by Press yesterday.
Yeah, I know, I was too. Like, sticking to the run game, all the play action plays, like, it felt like all the play action stops were, like, called at the perfect time. They picked up so many chunks off of play action. So I'm with you. I'll go with Trevor Lawrence. It was – had to be one of the best games of his career efficiency-wise. I know he had, like, 23 total expected points added. And, like, on ArbysDM.com, where they have, like, the advanced box score – just like all of his advanced stats are green for being like way above median. He also became the third youngest quarterback in NFL history to pass 10,000 career passing yards, which is great.
Give me the youngest.
Jameis Winston.
That's right.
So it's crazy. I think Trevor's like 30th or 40th in terms of like fastest quarterbacks to get to 10,000 yards in terms of like number of NFL games played, but just in terms of like how old the player is, Trevor's the third youngest in league history to get to 10,000. So cool stat and a good reminder of like just how young he is and like how much farther we have to go.
Only the fourth Jaguar quarterback to do it behind Bortles, Brunell, and Garrard. How did Leftwich not hit 10,000?
Yeah, dude, I don't know. I think he always only
like three seasons.
Yeah, and then Trevor, I mean, paid off my over 1.5 touchdowns best bet, thankfully. But like four total touchdowns, padding the stats. It was very much a Trevor Lawrence game. It was good to see that he's all the way back.
My brother, avid listener of the pod, did overs on Trayvon and Josh Allen sacks. They was both at half a sack, and they both got half a sack.
I actually, for Big Cat, I wrote over 0.25, over a quarter sack for Josh Allen was one of my prop bets on Big Cat.
That was a prop?
Yeah, dude, you can get, like, quarter sacks are, like, very common because of the half sack thing.
Yeah, like, yeah, that makes sense. But, like, they had
– because Josh Allen got a half sack, so he hit the over. So I got mine, but your brother didn't. So sorry, John's brother.
Why did they only have Allen on a quarter sack? That's wild. Like, that's what I'm more surprised about.
Oh, like, instead of a half sack?
Yeah. No, like, instead of anything, like, even, like, more. Like, I feel like he was a pretty safe money to at least breathe on Will Levis yesterday. Crazy.
I don't know. Like, that's what I thought, too, because, like, the Titans were missing both of their top two tackles with Dillard and Petit, whatever his name is, out. I can't explain that. Maybe it was, like, juice dodds. Maybe it was, like, quarter sack, but then like he didn't get good odds with it or something.
I don't think the Jags pressure numbers are going to look good this week. Like I saw what Next Gen had them for and nobody was overly impressive, but I think that's because of what the Titans did on offense, like just not a lot of dropbacks and stuff. So it probably had like something to do with it. Like if the Titans drop back, like actual dropbacks instead of just screens like 25, 30 times, Allen probably would have had like 2.5 sacks or something like that.
That's a good point. Yeah, I feel like I remember like 4 normal dropbacks for Levis.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, defensive player of the game. Let's hear it.
Oye Oluokun. He got sack of his own. He got the fumble recovery. He got a couple of tackles. Yeah, I kind of feel like I outlined it with my hot take, but he had probably the best game. I mean, he's getting my game boss, so I think, yeah, he had the best game of any Jags defender.
I got one for you. Okay. His first ever Jaguar Report podcast game ball. The Aussie, Adam Gotsis.
Oh, Adam Gotsis.
I felt like he was super disruptive yesterday, dude. Like, against the run and pass. Like, it feels like he's been on their team forever now. He's, like, played the same role over and over again. And dude is just super, like, consistent. Like, he's normally, like, a really consistent defensive lineman in terms of not giving up ground. Maybe not a ton of penetration. But yesterday, I thought super disruptive in the backfield a ton. Helped Caleb on, Chase on, get a penalty by combining their weight on Will Levis. Because I refuse that a ref is throwing a flag on Chase on for having his full body weight on the quarterback. I refuse to believe that's the guy you're calling that flag on. And I feel bad for I felt bad for Chase on. Like, he really got jobbed of that one, you know. A big play. He wasn't blocked at all on the play, but nonetheless. So
yeah, he did get got a little bit.
The Aussie gets my game ball.
If there's one player who's flashy, it's Adam Gotsis, because I agree with you where like he's consistent and doesn't really give up a lot of ground. But like, I feel like once every 3 weeks, going back to like 2021 or 2020, like he'll have like some sick tackle for loss and like just like an awesome highlight play that's like no one really notices it because it's like it's Adam Gotsis and he does it like once every couple of weeks and he's not a starter. So I don't know if you like, do you know how many snaps he played yesterday?
Let me see if
the game, like whether he started or like just what his role was with Ham out.
Let me see what the game book says.
Because it probably shouldn't have changed that much. Because, like I said, like at this point, Ham and Angelo Blackson are kind of like similar roles.
You ideally want to say that about a guy you just gave an extension to. That's good stuff. Gotsis played 48%. He played 48% of snaps.
48.
Dude, like. Okay. Fada Casa only played 32%.
I feel like that's season average. That's weird.
The Titans only had 40 plays ran.
The Titans.
40 plays. So yeah, like I'm looking at the game book and it says Fada Casa played 13 snaps. So I see that first. And I'm like, what the hell? And then I see that the Titans just literally were not on the field. So He did outsnap Fada Casa though, which. I don't know. Maybe it was going with the hot hand kind of thing, but
yeah,
I don't know. Fada Kasi also got outsnapped by it was either Blackson or Ledbetter a few weeks ago, and it's weird. I feel like he's playing good, you know. It's just they're not they like him. They're just not liking him, you know. that's what his role seems like. They're not in like with him.
All right, who's your special teams game ball?
You know who it is.
McManus?
Bro, the long snapper.
Oh, forcing, yeah. That's sick.
That forcing was a fumble, recovering a fumble, and then dancing in the end zone, like just completely dancing on the grave of the Titans. I've never seen a long snapper both force and recover. I feel like I've seen one force a fumble before, but not do both. Like they literally have said before, like he's like a linebacker on coverage teams. Like, he's shown it, like, before, like, over the last couple of years. Like, he makes a ton of tackles on special teams because, dude, I think he even hurt himself in a preseason game, like, doing it once. But he's best – oh, here we go. Most valuable long snapper in the league. There. I said it, and I would love for you to try to, yeah, debate that because I'll debate you in circles, buddy.
You love
Trent Baalke found the most valuable long snapper for pennies on the dollar. The rest of the league got Baalke balled. Everybody else is out here not focusing on special teams, and he's getting a middle linebacker to throw that ball back 20 yards. That is a masterclass right there.
There's always a Baalke ball to be had, isn't there?
There's always a – okay, here's another Baalke ball. Britton Strange has as many – oh, wait, I already said this last week. He has as many touchdowns as Trey Thumper. I already said that last week.
Still true.
Dang, how many – okay. Andre Sisco had more sacks than Arden Key. Is that a balky ball?
Sisco was like already on the team. That one wasn't your best work.
No.
Like another free agent or something.
Okay. Let's see. Okay.
All right. Well, I'll let you cook something up. I'll say my special teams scheme ball goes to Parker Washington for stepping in for Jamal. No, just kidding.
Did you see him run away from that one? It's like their game plan was literally do not return a thing.
Don't. Whatever you think you're out there for, you're not. I'll go with you. I'll go with Ross for my game ball too.
Hey, have you ever seen the Johnny Cash movie Walk the Line?
No.
There's a scene in it where they're like riding in a car with Jerry Lee Lewis. So you don't know who Jerry Lee Lewis is, do you?
It rings a bell.
Okay. Yeah, they're in a car with Jerry Lee Lewis, and he's talking about like the apple where like Adam and Eve, and he was like, God gave us a big old apple. He said, don't touch it. Don't think about touching it. Don't talk about touching it. Don't sing about touching it. Don't even touch it. That was Parker Washington with punch yesterday. Hey, don't even think about returning a punt. Like watching him run as fast as he could away from every punt killed me. It's one of my favorite things I've seen.
Oh, that's honestly like to make it like a real discussion. The Jamal Agnew's injury is not a small deal because I'm sure everyone's relieved to not really see him on offense anymore. But like he was like one of the best like. He's been one of the best returners in the league since he signed with the Jags. And so
how many games have there been where like a return from him has sparked like, you know, like a win or like even this year, like the Saints game that, you know, like he helped set up Kirk's touchdown. I feel like there's another game that I'm forgetting from this year. I don't know. I feel like there's been like at least like 4 to 5 games where he's had a big return to like, shift momentum or get them in like winning like score like so yeah. It's weird. Like on one hand, not having him means they can't put him on offense for the number of issues that plague them when that happens. But on the other hand, probably one of the 2 or 3 best returners in the league. So it's a tough one.
Yeah. I think the Jags there were like 6 in special teams DVOA going into last week. I can find it in about 2 seconds. I know they're definitely top 10. The Jags ranked 6. No, 1st in special teams DVOA going into the Titans game. They were 1st in special teams DVOA. And so Ross's fumble recovery will probably help that out, even though Tank's offsides will kind of negate it. But, yeah, having Jamal out for a couple weeks is definitely not
poor Tank, man. Poor Tank. I felt bad when I heard like the like stat people are behind us during the game. They're like, yeah. It was poor who was offsides. My heart just sank for the kid. I was like, man, that's terrible. I also so sitting near them now, you see how the sausage is made with some stats, and I don't know, man. Some guys are getting stats. Some kind of cooked in the NFL. This is how we're going by it. Like there was. On Ingram's drop, the guy was like, I want to give them a pass deflection. He didn't touch the ball, but he impeded the receiver. And in my head, I'm like, that is not at all how this works, dude. Like people get paid based off these stats. You can't do that.
That's actually terrible. That sucks to hear. Yeah, and what's worse, that or the report of that one lady saying she made up the sideline reports?
Don't get me started on that one.
That really sucks to hear, though. Just because I used to work at SIS, and so like my job was literally to chart football games for a few months. So
I'm making sure they didn't actually give him the pass deflection. This is
NFL people, National Football League people, or Jags people?
No, these are the people that like the NFL like stats people like that. Yeah. Like on NFL, like the play-by-play, like updating it. That these were them. They didn't give it to him. He got talked down from the ledge. But I heard that me and like Demetrius and Justin Lewis were all at the same time. Like, the hell did he just say?
Yeah, I'm sure they've got to have some kind of like I forget the right word for it, but like editing process, basically, or someone would double check the word.
Oh no, bro! I've sat there for two or three games now. It's kind of the Wild West. they're just yelling crap out, man. But
do you think it's like hard because of like how fast it's going, or it's just?
It probably is, but there's also like eight of them. They do a little roll call before the game. They're like, Brad here. Tom here. It's
horrible. Is it the same crew every time?
It sure sounds like it.
Yeah. So yeah. Those are the guys that are like spot the people too that I hear from the other side of the press box where they're like 84 on the tackle.
That's right.
59 on the tackle.
Yeah. Yesterday when they said Zay Jones caught a touchdown.
Yeah,
yeah. On Ridley's second touchdown, the guy in the press box said, "Zay Jones touchdown." I'm like, no, it was not. Like, that's Press Taylor's new wrinkle. He's gonna have Zay and Calvin switch jerseys. Well, Gus, you got anything else for us? I know we got a boogie here in a bit. Nothing. Okay,
I'm parting. Good. Looking forward to. I guess Friday will be in the air just because that's the day after Thanksgiving. Anyway, what's your parting take?
That's true. Happy Thanksgiving. My parting take and hot shot is that I would take the third drafted quarterback in next year's draft over Will Levis. I don't know who it's going to be, but Will Levis stinks right now. So that's my take.
Over Will Levis for the rest of this season.
There you go. Will Levis or Bryce Young if you had to win a game tomorrow.
Will Levis.
I think so. Poor kids. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. Hope you have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll be back on Friday to preview the, you know, probably the AFC South Championship. You know, like I'm getting like amped up like to cover that game already, and like I'm not even like a part of it. So I imagine how they're gonna feel. You know. So
yeah.
We'll be back on Friday. John Shipley, my co-host Gus Logue. Thank you guys for joining us, as always, and we will return.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.